Good afternoon. Today is April 12, 2017. We're going to open the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. And colleagues, today we're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 5002, Department of Administrative Services. And today we're going to hear about state facility summaries. Paul, what do we need to know as we kickstart this off?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have Alice Ravel here, the state architect, who's going to go through a project they've been working on for a couple biennia now on a review of state facilities.
Wonderful. So, Alice, come on up. Anyone else you want to bring with you?
It's my colleague, Daniel Christensen.
All right. Welcome.
Thank you.
I'll tell you what, if you'll just introduce yourself for the record, I'm just going to turn this over to you for your presentation.
Great. Good afternoon, Chair Smith and members of the committee. I'm Alice Vivel, state architect with the DAS Capital and Facility Planning. I'm joined by my colleagues, Daniel Christensen, senior planner, Jean Van Grunsven, system analyst, and Paul Platosh, virtually, who's a LIDAR analyst. So our office, as Paul said, was created 4 years ago to develop the long-range capital plan for the state's real estate portfolio. And I plan to show you what we've learned and how we're using the program and tools to improve our practices and management. 4 years ago, the legislature invested $4 million in facility assessments for our program. Before I came here today, I got a call from the Pew Charitable Trust. They have a new research project that they're launching about deferred maintenance of public capital assets and focusing on the states. So they are interested in this very question and wanted to know if we at the state of Oregon were using data-driven budget decision-making. So it's very interesting. Our approach is to invest in good data and build on existing resources to develop simple-to-use analytic tools and to share those broadly. Today, I'll present an overview of the what and where of our portfolio, the metrics of our performance metrics, the technology, which is changing the way we understand and inform, and our planning process. So first, the big picture. We own 58.5 million square feet, own and lease, I should say, sorry.
I just want to make sure that I understand that we're using own and lease in terms that we all agree to. One of the things we were just talking about before we came on the record is the state system of higher education, and I want to know, is that included in your analysis?
It is. We'll show you the breakdown in a bit.
Okay. One other question that I have for you is, how cooperative have they been in putting this data together?
Higher education?
Yes.
They've been cooperative. But having said that, what we've asked them for is their summary information.
And what does that tell me?
It tells you that we know, we have not dived into their deferred maintenance. That's not part of what we've asked. We've asked for their summary information of how many buildings they own and the leases they have.
I guess, follow up, I guess I'm wondering, I understand there needs to be a little bit of a ramp up, but we've been working at this for 4 years, and I'm trying to figure out why we're still working at it, and I'm trying to figure out why there would be a summary. Some of the buildings that are ours, the state of Oregon's, that are on college campuses are in deplorable condition.
This is true.
And I'd like to know whether or not they're being helpful in providing information. This is an Oregon problem. This isn't parochial. And I would have the expectation, and stated here on the record, Mr. Chairs, that they better get helpful. And I know you have a particular interest in one institution of higher learning, but I just think that having to fight for information is annoying.
So what I would say is that our focus has been on state agencies, and that is really what we have been spending the money to solve, is to develop an understanding of state agencies and the status of their portfolio. The higher education portfolio, they can report the information to us. I, in fact, have not asked them for their deferred maintenance information. So,
and I would ask, Mr. Chair, why not?
Again, it's because the higher education largely is not under our purview.
But if this is if this is going to be a comprehensive look at state facilities, how can we not do it without knowing the condition of all of our holdings?
So that is something that we can look at and that we could do in the future. Absolutely, Senator.
Mr. Chair, if we have the opportunity to act on this within the DAS budget, I would respectfully ask that you and Co-Chair Manning discuss with the big co-chairs the possibility of putting a budget note in that makes that this question of deferred maintenance on university and it's a lesser degree community college where we own the buildings to make that a mandatory reporting item.
Paul, will you make a note of this so we can visit with the co-chairs?
Thank you.
Thank you.
And just please know, this is a conversation that's internally going on right now with the co-chairs and members of the budget team.
So when I was at the chancellor's office, as you know, Senator Johnson, we did track that. So there is information on that, I am sure. That hasn't been part of our purview to date.
I guess I'm just so frustrated I could pop. I want to make it part of, I mean, it might not be part of today's presentation.
It isn't.
But especially if the data has already been collected in the chancellor's office, you ought to just be able to press send and poof, there it is. And ask the universities to update it to make sure the building hasn't fallen down from neglect in the interim.
Understood.
So we'll make a note of this. We'll visit with the co-chairs. I think they'll be very accommodating. At some point, we'll have a future conversation.
Great. Thank you. If I can continue. So what this presentation focuses on is 50% of the portfolio, which represents the 19 public agencies that have the right to own real estate.
So before we move on really quick.
Sure.
So today we're going to focus on the 50%.
Exactly.
Perhaps, Paul, with a little bit of discussion from the co-chairs, we could pick another day here in the near future where we could talk about the 49% of higher ed.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. So of that 50%, 78% of that is owned and 22% is leased. You can see the other stats there. 22.5 million of gross square footage that's owned, 4.8 billion in current replacement value, about 5,000 facilities, 1,500 leases, 10.5 million in monthly rent.
Mr. Chair,
mm-hmm.
As you're doing this inquiry, are you logging for perhaps yourself in the future or people that will succeed you in this endeavor, those facilities that could or should be deemed a surplus and we divest ourselves of them? We own 5,000 facilities.
Right.
I think it begs the question, do we need to? And could some of those be repurposed for a higher and greater value?
No, that's a very good question. Great. So, to better understand the 78% that we owned, this diagram characterizes the portfolio along three dimensions. The size, the aggregate size, which is the x-axis there, the aggregate value, which is the y-axis, and the size of the squares represents the number of actual facilities, the number of buildings. So you can see the nature of different agency operations reflected in this diagram. If you look in the upper right-hand corner, you see DOCs. They have the most value and the most square footage, but relatively small number of buildings. So they have very large, expensive buildings. Whereas something like Parks and Rec, which is the green square you see in the lower left, they have lots of small facilities, relatively low value, relatively little square footage. And it's just a reflection of their operations. Hmm. So we have very diverse portfolio, very different business operations that they serve.
Yep, Senator.
You brought up DOC. So assuming that you have looked at DOC facilities, and if I wanted to call out one, and I said, as of April 12th, 2017, yeah. What's the condition report on fill in the blank? Can you give me that?
Yes, I can.
normal folks access that in some computer system, or is it considered proprietary, or where is it housed? How would I go find that?
It is in a computer system, and we have that because it's been analyzed. It is in a computer system. We are in the process, and I'll show this later in the presentation, of figuring daylighting this information.
You know, one point I want to bring up on this chart, though, it's interesting. While the Department of Correction has a smaller number of high value, those buildings are of singular purpose.
Absolutely.
And so it's not as if the state easily can just move that, you know, put it on the market and sell it.
And I think that's true for much of our portfolio.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I'd like to take this out of the hypothetical, because the Warrenton OYA facility has been on the chopping block. It is in my district. Mm-hmm. The consultants that are consultants to OYA were there yesterday. They are in the process of doing a facilities assessment. They had some initial observations. And I would love to ground truth what those consultants looked at yesterday with what you're carrying in your records.
Sure.
Just to see how they jive.
Right. And OYA was one of the first agencies that worked with us in this project. And they have the same information, the same system.
And I guess in the interest of full disclosure, I have to say that the initial report, when they talk about failing and buckled windows, mold, I'm so discouraged as a taxpayer that we are allowing our facilities to just crumble. Mm-hmm. It's shameful. And yet at the same time that we're hearing these reports of facilities that are falling apart, we've got policy bills making it through the process, queue jumping what I think is going to be a data-driven prioritized list from you. We've got other bills queue jumping to try to put favorite projects ahead of others while we're letting these just deteriorate to the point that we're going to be rebuilding some of them, the college campuses, if they fall down.
That's a good point. Okay. So, to continue, four agencies represent about 72% of our portfolio. They're the top four there: DOC, DAS, OMD, and ODOT. They are the big agencies. And the 10 of the 19 represent about 8% of the portfolio. So this just is to show the big variance in distribution of the portfolio.
I'd point out just really quickly, when that real estate occurs in Umatilla, the Oregon Military Department, I assume, is going to bump significantly on that when it leaves the hands of the U.S. Army and becomes National Guard property. Or will that be National Guard Bureau and still their property?
It's still OMD, I think.
Oh, is
yeah. So we have facilities in every corner of the state, but the bulk of the facilities are really on the I-9 corridor, or mm-hmm. I-5 corridor. Mm-hmm. And 38% of them are in Salem. The focus of our attention really is on the major facilities, and that is in statute, as having facilities valued at over $1 million, and practically it makes sense because these are the facilities that have an outsized impact on our overall portfolio. And that is 12% in terms of the number of facilities. But that 12% represents 72% in value, in current replacement value, and 89%, almost 90% in size by area. Oh, I'm sorry. I did it exactly the opposite. 72 in size and 90% in value. Thank you. Another big factor of these older buildings, or these larger buildings, is that 41 years of age in average. And that means that 65% of those were built before there was a seismic code. So that's obviously a risk for us. A big driver for major facilities is usually growth. But we looked at our growth over the last 12 years, both in the number of employees and in the added facilities, and both of them have been relatively flat. These indicators may lag, but they usually correlate. So we think that there isn't a big driver for new facilities in terms of growth. So to summarize our portfolio, we have about 5,000 buildings, but they are only 12% of them are major. Our facilities are widely dispersed, but they're concentrated along the I-5 corridor. We have 19 agencies that own real estate, but DOC owns 50% of the major facilities, and DAS owns 22% of the major facilities. Our major facilities are relatively old, at an average of 41 years, and growth is really not a driver for our portfolio. Rather, we think the big driver is going to be modernization and replacement.
Do we have any type of vacancy analysis?
Nope, we don't. That's a very good question, because we don't have data. We don't have the data to get to that. We're working on that, actually.
I mean, obviously, I mean, if we have spaces that are underutilized, it might make sense for us to look at moving folks who don't need as much space in one location to space that's free and available.
Yeah, looking for opportunities for consolidation.
Right.
It's
right.
Definitely what we're looking at.
So let me ask before we move off that thought, how do we do that? How do we analyze that occupancy rate and then try to figure out what's the optimal use of properties?
We did a study, you know, for offices. Again, you know, depending upon what the actual operation is in a space, their needs for space differ wildly. For corrections, they have a very different metric than an office metric. But office is a pretty standardized metric across agencies.
What I'm thinking about are these small other fund little agencies that are off renting commercial space when we may have vacant space in, you know, a DAS building.
Right.
So it could save us money.
Right. We have, in DAS buildings, we have very little vacant space. In fact, we have almost no vacant space. It's really been a problem to do renovations in spaces because there's no place. We have no swing space.
So let me give you an example really quick, and I'll go to you, Senator. In LeGrand, Speaker Simmons, when he was here, built this wonderful building in LeGrand. I kid you not, at least 40% of it is vacant. And it's been vacant since Mark was Speaker, so I don't know, we've gone 16, 18 years. Hmm. And it's never been utilized, but there's many other state agencies utilizing other small commercial spaces.
Right.
And there's no reason they couldn't be utilizing this space that's by now almost paid for.
Right. No. Is it a state-owned facility?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. DHS is in part of it, EOU is in part of it, and then a third of it.
I know that facility, actually.
Yeah, it's off of Geckler.
Right.
And so at some point, I think we ought to just have a conversation about how do we analyze that situation. Senator?
I guess I'm missing a really important piece of this,
sure.
And that is why you're not getting the information comprehensively. Vacancy seems to me to be a fundamental question. And I recall, and I think Co-Chair Smith will, during our time here, that we discovered to our horror when ODF&W was in Portland, they had an entire empty building. And it was thousands of square feet. So when you say we're not asking that, what are we going to do, go back and ask a second time later? Or why can't we get it all at once?
We have been asking for occupancy data.
So why aren't you getting it?
We're getting data. It's just not very accurate. I think it's because, on the whole, it's not what agencies track. I mean, just being completely honest with you.
I appreciate that, but I got to push back. How hard is it for someone to look at their space, get a tape measure out, and say, these four spaces at this square footage is available?
It's a good question.
And, Mr. Chair, when do we make it their interest? If they're not doing it, we're spending $4 million in counting to have this inquiry done. So far, we've asked for a couple of things that I think are foundational, and it's not included in the inquiry. I'd like to know when we make it their business. They are running budgets. They are running operations. They are tasked with some degree of efficiency. And if a state agency director can't tell you how many square foot they have under lease or ownership, I think that is a shocking dereliction of duty.
I think they can tell you how many square feet they have in lease and ownership. That information we have. What I thought you were asking is whether we can say definitively that all that space is occupied and how it's occupied. Am I correct in that question?
It seems to me if I'm an agency manager and I walk to the third floor of my building and I look out and there are no cubicles and no people, I ought to be able to deduce a conclusion from that.
This is true. It's true. Well, we've tried to do this in DAS's own buildings. And what we've come up with, because we've hit this wall several times, we've come up with a tool that we're going to show you in a little bit.
So I think really quick, and I want to see the tool, but I think, Paul, we're going to need to have a further conversation on this and work with you to figure out how to get you the tool you need to have these folks respond. Because I agree with the senator. These are fundamental questions that you ought to be able to ask and they ought to be able to answer.
And last but not least, it is the duty of DAS to know this. I've been here for a long time, and there has been a new DAS director virtually every year that I've been here. That's supposed to be the mother of all agencies. That's supposed to be setting the tone and tenor for other agencies. That's supposed to be giving direction to agencies. And if they are derelict in their responsibility, how can we expect performance from others? I think it's shocking.
Yeah, so let's continue.
Okay.
But just know we're gonna continue this conversation.
Okay, great. So what we can tell you and what we can measure really is the effectiveness. And that is really what we've been focusing our attention and effort on, mm-hmm. is looking at what is the actual condition of our facilities. So we've done independent third-party investigations of these facilities to provide a reliable baseline understanding so that we can actually plan and execute projects. So that has been the focus of this effort.
I'm sorry.
What?
We're paying consultants to go tell us whether or not we have space utilization. We can't get it from the agencies?
No. What I was referring to is the condition of the buildings.
Ah.
So the effectiveness, that first metric of effectiveness, that we are asking a consultant to go out and do. So it's architects, engineers, and professional facility assessors that go out and in detail evaluate these buildings, look at their systems, bar tag, major equipment. It all gets put into a database. And the reports from this are managed on an ongoing basis so that we can actually understand the condition and position of our facilities.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Just a quick question. So is this a new method, or has this been done previously? And if it's been done previously, where is the data on that? So I would think that instead of trying to reinvent the wheel, if the wheel has already been invented, then it would take some fine tweaking. So,
No, the data didn't exist. Largely didn't exist.
So this has never been done. The assessments and with outside contractors come in, that's never been done.
Not holistically.
So let me just follow up on that if I can. So in this evaluation, where are we in the process of the 51% of the buildings? How far? Okay, there we are. Okay.
Actually, so this Shocking. Actually is a slide that shows how the measure, what the measurements mean.
Okay.
So there's an aggregate ratio that describes the health of a building. And this is the deferred maintenance and capital renewal, which was basically the need over the current replacement value. And that ratio tells you whether your building's in good condition, fair, poor, or very poor. So to answer your question of how much we've actually already done,
uh-huh.
we've done 48% is complete in those four agencies. The three agencies, Fish and Wildlife, Forestry, and Transportation, when that is complete, we'll have completed 70% of the portfolio.
And will that information then be presented to Paul at LFO? Will you be able to get a copy of that, Paul?
Sure.
Okay.
And in the budget reports now, there is reports from every agency about their current deferred maintenance.
Okay.
It's in the budget report.
Okay, thank you.
Or in their budget submission. Thank you.
Let me ask one more question before we move off of that.
Sure.
Can we then take that data and almost flip it upside down, and those that are very poor, can we prioritize which is in the worst condition all the way down to the very best, so that way we know the priority of the projects we need to focus on?
You can. But one thing I think that's very important to think about when we're looking at the conditions of these buildings is that it's an opportunity. You know, many of these buildings haven't had significant investment in decades.
Right.
When the buildings now, they may be in poor condition. They also may be completely not functional for the use that's in them. So it's an opportunity to really think about whether it makes sense to do replacements in kind or not. And really, that's the point of modernization and programming and really doing strategic planning, because the smart money looks at what your program is, how you can execute it, where does it actually need to happen, are there other ways to provide space and actually to consolidate, use less space? Because what we believe is that the footprint of the state actually doesn't really need to increase overall footprint. What we really are looking at is, do we have the right kind of space for the future needs?
And I'll quit interrupting you in a moment here. The ones that are in progress, Fish and Wildlife, Forestry, Transportation, when do you anticipate those will be complete?
By contract, they have to be completed at the end of this biennium. So,
Okay, so perhaps during legislative days in September, or December.
Certainly by February.
February session. Can we make this an item of discussion?
Absolutely.
And what I would ask for, if Mr. Co-Chair, if you're okay with this, I'd like to see that list flipped upside down, and kind of, here are the priorities. Here's the very worst. Here's the next worst, all the way.
We could easily do that.
Could you do it? Perfect.
Absolutely.
Thank you. All right. I'm going to quit interrupting. Yeah.
No. Please. So, in summary, these are the agencies, and the current FCI that you see there, which is like the fifth column over, that is their aggregate facility condition index for all of their major facilities. Some of them are through the completed FCIs, some of them are, you know, ones to be completed, and some of them are self-reports.
Got it. Senator Johnson.
What tool do you have to take into account changes in the building? I look at OLCC, third one down from the top. They just got a new roof. They completely blew the budget for it, but they ended up getting a new roof. This says 2016. Does that calculate the new roof at OLCC that was incredibly expensive?
Actually, this was before the new roof was done. So what this chart represents is what is in their budget requests. We actually have a new version of this that we can also show. But it's when a project is completed, what they do is update the database, and then the new information comes out.
And also,
if they learned that other problems emerged that weren't seen when the facility assessment was done, that happens too, that information also gets put in. So the information is constantly refreshed.
Please.
Where you have self-report up there, and we've already in this hearing kind of teased out that self-reporting may not be the most honest assessment of their condition or occupancy. Do all of those then expect to change to third-party validation?
All of them, no. For example, Parks and Recreation, they're not going to participate in this program. They have their own methodology that they use, and they have their own funding streams and all of that, and so they are declining to participate in it. But all of the other agencies will likely do so.
declining to participate is striking a familiar theme for me. If this tool is going to have any validity and is going to help inform the legislature about how to make decisions, and you're basing this on their current request for budget, I don't know what problem we're solving for. Are we solving for the problem of how do we prioritize deferred maintenance? Are we solving for the problem of should they be allowed to have additional capital to build new buildings? Are we solving for should they have additional capital to fix the ones that are about to fall down? What problem are we solving for?
I think this data informs all of the above.
But not if agencies can just arbitrarily decline to participate. Who else has declined to participate?
I think they're the only ones. But my understanding is that in their statute, they don't have to. That is, in fact...
That's why God made the legislature.
Okay, so here's where we're going to go. Here's where we're going to go, colleagues. In the interest of time, because I'm looking at the number of slides we have to complete, I'm going to ask everyone, and I'll including the chairs, to hold our questions for the next 15 minutes. And then in 15 minutes, we'll probably have a few questions we want to ask. But let's keep moving forward.
Okay.
Here.
I think we can go through this pretty quickly.
Okay.
This is just, the 2016 data of these top agencies that we completed the work, Administrative Thanks. Services, Corrections. I just draw your attention to the number in the circle on the left and the circle on the right. So the one on the left is its current FCI, and if no investment is made, what the anticipated FCI will be in the future.
This is good for us to get all this stuff. Mm-hmm.
And here's OIA and OLCC. So in a nutshell, this is our findings. You know, the facility condition varies largely, and it depends on whether the agency has a revenue stream to address this or not. Mm-hmm. DAS, we have a depreciation reserve that's part of our rent structure, and we've used that to actually maintain our facilities. Agencies that underfund, underperform. It's as simple as that. And facilities, on average, last about 50 years before you need to do a major overhaul. And our average major facility is 41 years old. So doing the
math. I'm about to break my own rule. Sorry. It's a prerogative of the chair. So when we're looking at these other fund budgets, yeah. One of the things we as a committee do is we look at, you know, how many months of operating capital do they have? Perhaps we ought to be asking the question, in addition to how many months of operating capital do we have, are you also fully providing adequate maintenance
right.
based upon the cash you have on hand and measuring that as well? Okay, didn't mean to interrupt, but I think we need to think about that. Okay, thank you.
Sure. So, and space utilization, that's another conversation. We'll talk about that later. And again, through better data, we can have better insights into costs and everything else. So the next thing we just want to talk to you about is what are the tools that we're using right now, the technology tools, to help inform this conversation. We've spent time linking our data and advanced technology to develop insights for strategic decision making. It's exactly what you're talking about. And we're developing visualizations, which we'll show you in a minute, that allow us to understand in an intuitive way information, not just for us, but for you and the public, so that you can have information that's accessible, that's understandable, and that's holistic. So with that, Daniel.
Well, I will give you kind of a brief overview of what we're trying to do. And I want to assure the Senator, Senator Johnson, that our intent is to daylight this data that we've collected and make it accessible to people. Part of it is the access, and the other part of it is taking the data and transforming it into meaningful information around topical things where we can have an elevated discussion. So it's a range of different information products that we are trying to produce and put them into different systems that have different levels of access. Just as an example, we can go live.
Really quick, before you move on, will you just give us your name one more time for the record?
My name's Daniel Christensen. I'm the senior planner in the CFO's office.
Perfect. Thank you.
So we've updated our CFO website page where we have this information available on demand to people, to the public. We've also created an offsite portal, which is really kind of our information hub that's going to allow people to access a range of things. And we're still kind of figuring out the packaging of this. Some of it could be raw data, open data, that would allow people to consume that information and draw their own conclusions. In some other cases, we need to have packaged information products that illuminate a particular issue. Sort of our methods of choice are, one, using business information tools, BI tools, where we can click on an agency and all the other graphs sort of change in relationship based upon the metric that you're trying to illuminate. And we can have a range of metrics in a dashboard that answers specifically the questions that you're trying to do. And so you can isolate on ODOT or Parks or DAS and drill down to the level that you want. Equal enough, we could have a specific building level report. We also have, since our data in our buildings are spatial in nature, we're investing a lot of geospatial content and tools that are open source and they're web-based that are going to allow people to access this and look at these problems and these buildings in context to a lot of different other form of data sets. Another example might be, one thing, the issue of occupancy. So we've taken building floor plans and we've transformed them into geospatial data, and this allows us to put them into web-based tools, like an iPad, to go out and have people in the buildings. Mm-hmm. So DAS owns a building, but they may have a variety of different agencies as occupants. We can knock on the door, but maybe we build relationships with people in those agencies to go in and fill out and look at those cubes, just like you're suggesting. Is it occupied? If it is occupied, who occupies it? And then we have some sort of unique identifier. We can connect it to any kind of system that allows us to illuminate a cube, which is the most divisible unit of government, for a range of metrics that whatever we want to do. But on a broader level, we could do it on a building, just as simply the building condition. And secondarily, we could take that information and put it into information products that are a little bit more digestible for people, which may be a 3D visualization of a building, which takes that data and just extrudes it and makes kind of a 3D floor plan, but you click on these individual features and it displays the data. So we want to take the data and make it accessible through these sort of public web-based tools, as simple as possible and as dynamic as possible, but we've had to build the system to do it. So this is a little bit, in a nutshell, kind of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. To answer that very basic question about the data, so we're making it available, and
can I ask a question really quick? Paul and I were just visiting on this, and I apologize, colleagues. I keep breaking my own rules, so please feel free to.
I'm going
to
have a heart attack in the meantime.
Is there a way for DAS and emergency responders to be sharing this information? This is pretty powerful.
Absolutely. So that's why we want to build this. But having said this, what you're looking at here, this is our demo of this. It's a proof of concept that something like this will work. So to say that it's not ready to launch yet, it really isn't. That is going to take time and process. And, you know, to be honest, we right now, our budget request doesn't include this work. Okay. You know, we're doing what we can within the constraints that we have.
Okay, thank you. Senator Johnson?
Thank you.
Yeah.
What does your budget request include?
It includes the people that are sitting here and the continuation of the software so that all the data that we have is still accessible to all of the agencies. We can still work on it. But it doesn't include anything really, frankly, beyond that.
I guess the big question that I've got is, other than all these pretty pictures, and I get the point about law enforcement and if there was an incident, what I want to know is, do you have any assurance from the governor that this tool is going to be used when the governor's budget gets put together, so that we're not just firing off requests for money, but we're actually prioritizing putting breaking buildings back together again?
Actually, so I would say, Senator Johnson, if I could respond to your question. The information from this system is part of each agency's budget request and was part of the budget request that goes to the Capital Projects Advisory Board, and they review it and approve it or don't. And it also goes to LFO.
I don't understand what you just said. Each agency is making a request to help fund this?
No. Each agency, the information that comes from the system, I think is what you asked, or that's what I understood. That information is being used in each agency's budget request. And it is being brought to the Capital Projects Advisory Board. So there is, you know, some data and there is some due diligence behind each budget request.
A question, Mr. Siebert. I've sat through now, I don't know how many budget presentations for agencies, and I saw some of them up there, and I know some of them own their own building. I have yet to hear from one agency that there was any kind of analysis of their space or condition. Is that happening in LFO?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, there is in the budget binder a report that comes from this system that talks about their facilities. And it's in the back of the budget binder along with a number of other reports, but there is a report in the budget binder that talks about facilities. Usually, if there's a capital request, that has to be in there too. If they have a capital request.
So is there a way, Paul, for the co-chairs to where we can get a little clarification on this and what this is going to cost, what it, kind of a little executive summary of all this?
Mr. Chair, absolutely. I can tell you that for, I believe, 13-15 and 15-17, there was $2 million each biennium for this, for these, essentially for the contractors to go out and do the A lot of it was for the contractors to go out and do the surveys of the conditions of all the facilities.
Right.
You know, as you heard in the governor's budget, there is no additional funding for this because of the budget constraints the state's under. I think there's an expectation that they'll be continuing to work with the data they do have. You'll hear that they'll have at least 70% of all the facilities done by that time. So we could expect some work to be done, not just a report to be gathered and sent over.
That's what I'm trying to figure out, Mr. Chair, is how do you animate this into action? I'm so sick of, not you guys, but sick of reports that come. They're this tall. You know there's a pony in there some way. They hand you the shovel and say, go dig it out. I yearn for the day that an agency manager would come in with this tool and say, on the third floor of this building, we think we have excess space. We would make it available into the DAS system. We could consolidate into a smaller. This has got to
That's
be
what we want to hear.
A high priority, and I would expect the governor and the head of DAS to say, this is a very big deal for us. The taxpayers deserve to know what condition their buildings are in, and the fact that we as government have in many cases chosen not to take care of them. And yet we're coming back to ask for more. I think that's a problem.
Thank you.
Let's continue.
Well, what I would say is that all of this information has actually informed DAS's strategic plan. So we took the information from the facility conditions assessment, the seismic evaluations that we did, and we're doing them for other agencies as well as part of the facility, as part of the funding that you provided. Looking at our workplace strategy, which is really our functional uses, and the locational dynamics to develop a strategic plan. So our key findings are for DAS is that we lack a facility for the continuity of government post-Cascadia. We just don't have it. And many of our facilities don't meet life safety standards for seismic. This is in DAS's own portfolio. We have a modernization need because so much of our space really has not been touched in many years. We lack sufficient capacity in terms of available space to move people into, swing space to actually even execute projects. We're executing them incrementally, and that's a really expensive way to do work. And there is, of course, just as you've said, the opportunity to consolidate space, mm-hmm. leased into owned space and leased into lease space. So all of these are things that are part of our plan. So we did a planning process, you know, engagement, find our vision, goals, strategies. We developed a 10-year plan with actionable projects. So that we have for the state, for DAS. And our number one project is really what we want to talk to you about, which is the Oregon Resilience Building, Buildings 1 and 2. And this is a project which is a purpose-built design. From the very beginning, what we're looking at is specific performance criteria for this building so that it will work after a Cascadia event, so it will operate completely off the grid, because the expectation is that there won't be energy, there won't be fuel, but this would be a building that the legislature, the governor, the essential people can work to make sure that continuity of government continues.
Let me understand this. We've been sitting here now for almost an hour, hearing about how broken our portfolio of buildings are with all this deferred maintenance.
Right.
And is this a suggestion to build a new building?
It is. And let me tell you why. Because this building enables us to actually renovate all of the other buildings.
It's going to print money?
No, but it's going to create capacity. It's going to do, it creates capacity so that we can move people out of buildings into an owned building and move them back and do renovations. It's that cascading way of actually doing the work. Otherwise, we shrink people and we can only do a little piece of work at a time. This allows us to execute projects, you know, in the most cost-effective way, because it gives capacity for folks to move.
We've got a question here. Representative Gumberg.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been quietly listening, but when I heard the phrase cascading effect, I had to jump in.
Please.
We're talking about building a structure here that can resist a 9.0 cascade event.
Right.
And those of us on the coast keep hearing concerns issued that we can't put up structures that are going to resist this event when it comes. What makes this building different than the ones that many of us would like to construct along our coastline?
Great. So this building is designed so maybe we should look at the diagrams. It's designed to an operational standard. So this shows just a diagram of the different levels of performance. But just like in Japan, where you have buildings that actually are designed to resist this earthquake, it is the same here. I think maybe the issue on the coast is, and I don't know this representative, is that they're talking about perhaps a tsunami event. That's another matter. But in Salem, because we don't have a water issue, or not that kind of water issue, that it is designed so that the building can actually move horizontally. And the energy systems for the building, it will generate its own energy. Yeah, going back to this, so that it will be operable after a disaster. It is designed to operate passively, so no mechanical ventilation after an event, that it has a solar array, it'll have natural ventilation, and it uses its own thermal mass. We'll use wells for water. So it's really designed for, in that event, it'll operate. When we did this analysis, we challenged ourselves to see, is it possible to build a building like this essentially at the same cost as a standard building? And back in 2008, DAS did a study to build what it would take to build a new building on the red lot, the yellow lot, and the executive building. And we used that study to see whether we could build a building of this kind of criteria at pretty much the same cost. And we found that we could. in our feasibility study.
Mr. Chairman, to follow up?
Please.
And I take this as very good news. So it would be fair for me to go back home to my district and say, tsunamis aside, the state architect says we can build structures that can resist this coming earthquake.
Absolutely.
I'm having deja vu all over again. This seems highly reminiscent of a structure that was proposed in Portland and resoundingly rejected by this body, the Sustainability Center. I guess I have to ask, you all are pondering two new structures. Do they have price tags attached with them?
They do.
What are they?
I think both of them together is, I think it's $229 million.
Okay, so we've been pondering.
I'm trying to remember that. I'm sorry, yeah.
We've been pondering $250 million worth of new building.
Yeah.
While in the meantime, we've only made it through half of our current portfolio to see what disreputable shape it's in. Is that a fair statement?
No, I would say it's 70%. And
will be.
Will be 70%, yes.
Will be when they're done.
Will be when you're done. We're 50, if I understood you correctly in your presentation, we're about 50% along that road right now. And we're contemplating these two new buildings. And my curiosity would be, in DASA's and the executive branch's wisdom, where would they prioritize these in respect to the seismic resilience plan for this building that is being revived right now?
We don't have an opinion on that. I don't think that's our purview.
Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I like the 15 minutes. Let's let her finish the presentation. I have a lot of experience in all this stuff, and I understand where you're trying to go with it. Being a newbie in this job, it seems to me like we're trying to reinvent the wheel and not getting it to go around.
Okay.
So I'd love to hear the rest of the presentation and finish
that.
It. So I think some of the questions may be answered.
Thank you, Senator.
Okay, so moving forward, then we will put a restraint on us and let you go forward unless something really jumps out.
We've covered this slide. This shows really what base isolation looks like, which I'm sure you've seen this diagram in the past. This is an example of it. It's a giant rubber cylinder that the columns of the building sit on. It moves, and there's a moat where that gentleman is standing, and that is the degree of movement that the building can actually do. So this is, engineered. In a passively designed building, the point of this is that it's high performance and low energy and low waste. And it isn't for its own sake. We're doing this because that's what is going to be needed in order for the building to operate when the rest of the systems in the state fail. So the second building, which is actually a parking garage and energy hub, will have, in addition to 1,600 parking spaces, which it needs to have, for the parking that is displaced by these two buildings and also the additional capacity needed for this building itself. There's a PV array, there's generators, batteries, all of that to make sure that the Oregon Resilience Building 1 actually works, that it operates during this disaster mode. But in a normal mode, it will be a normal office building. A highly energy efficient office building, but a normal office building. And another area that needs to be considered is non-structural bracing. And what that means is, anchoring in place things like the ceilings and the lighting and furniture so that when movement happens, nothing falls on the occupants. So the reason that we're doing this is that one, it's faster recovery for disasters. In the building, you'll be able to still deliver critical services, and it accelerates the execution of the rest of the plan by creating capacity for swing space. And by creating that capacity, it lowers the cost of doing other work. And our portfolio has buildings that need major overhauls. So with that, I'll answer any questions. Does this answer your question, Senator?
I think there's...
Go ahead, Senator DeBoer.
I just question how we're getting to there. I certainly understand what you're saying in the less cost and having a... I think you spend a lot of money for something that may not happen. And your diesel generators have a whole nother issue because we're dealing with diesel fuel. How much fuel can you stock? We know if we have a major event, you're not going to have food either. I mean, there's so many things that become. I tend to say that we piecemeal everything we're doing. Managing buildings isn't rocket scientist. Managing maintenance isn't rocket scientist. And the fact you have, what, 560 million square feet just means you need more people and delegate more authority. What if I see anything I see as micromanaging and not holding people responsible for the job to do the things that has to happen. And everywhere in state, government, cities, everything, maintenance is the first thing that goes. And it's consistent schools, everything. So, hey, we keep dealing with the little things. We don't seem to deal with the big things. So I guess I'm a little frustrated at the whole experience. And we're going to approve budgets piecemeal and not deal with the big things. So, hey, so that's just wandering around a little bit. The challenges will come in the next 56 days.
Or less. Other questions from the committee? No further questions.
I'll just continue just a second. What I see is a huge amount of opportunities here.
Agreed.
To fix things.
Okay. Anything further? No further questions from the committee? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're done. Okay. So, with that, this will conclude the public hearing. Or is there anyone else who want to provide any public testimony or part of this hearing? No, if not, this will conclude the public hearing on HB 5002. Any other business? Michael? Good. Anyone else? Well, with that, we will be adjourned, and we will reconvene tomorrow. 1500, 3 o'clock, civilian time. We are adjourned. We are adjourned. Civilian.